This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. George Jones's hit He Stopped Loving Her Today, Tanya Tucker's I Believe the South is Gonna Rise Again, and Toby Keith's I Want to Talk About Me were all written by my guest Bobby Braddock. He was inducted into the Nashville Hall of Fame in 1981. After decades of lyric writing, he's written a memoir about growing up in old Florida called Down in Auburndale. Let's start with a Braddock song that was a number one country hit for Tammy Wynette in 1968.
Our little boy is 4 years old and quite a little man. So we spell out the words we don't want him to understand, like T-O-Y or maybe S-U-R-P-R-I-S-E. But the words we're hiding from him now tear the heart right out of me. Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E becomes final today. Me and little J-O-E will be going away. I love you both and this will be pure H-E-double-L for me. Oh, I wish that we
Bobby Braddock, welcome to Fresh Air. So tell us the story behind this song. How did you write it?
The F-U-R-C, I had written a song called I-L-O-V-E-Y-O-U. Do I have to spell it out for you? And it wasn't very good. And that sort of inspired this song. And I wrote it. Nobody recorded it. I asked my friend Curly Putman why did he think no one had recorded it. And he said he thought the melody was a little bit too happy for a sad song. And I said, what would you do? And he got around the title line and just made it sound real mournful, and mine sounded sort of like a detergent commercial. And I said, hey, let's get it on tape like that. And he didn't want any of it, and I wanted him to have half, so we compromised, and he took a quarter of it. And Tammy Wynette recorded it within, I'd say, probably a week or two after that.
Can you sing us the more upbeat version that you originally wrote?
Okay, what I had was, everything else was the same except the title line. I had, oh, I wish that we could stop this D-I-V-O-R-C-E. And Curly changed it to, I wish that we could stop this D-I-V-O-R-C-E, which made it a lot better. And that little change made the difference, I think, between it being a hit and just gathering cobwebs and nobody ever having heard it.
Let's talk about another of your most famous songs, a song recorded by George Jones, He Stopped Loving Her Today. And after we talk about it a little bit, we'll hear it. Now, this song tells a story. Would you describe the story?
It's a story of a man who whose love was so strong that the only way he could get over this woman was to die. I think he was a terrible role model, a very bad role model. The man was obsessed with this woman, and he never got over, he never moved on. Then we wrote with, again, this is one I wrote with Curly Putman, and I thought it was just an okay song. I didn't think it was that great a song. And when the producer, Billy Sherrill, played me George's recording of it, I thought, wow, this is something really great. I think in this instance, the artist and the production elevated the song to a place that it wouldn't have been otherwise. I really attributed so much of the success of this to George Jones and his producer, because after I heard it, I realized then that it was indeed something very special.
Now, you mentioned that you co-wrote the song with Curly Putman, who also co-wrote D-I-V-O-R-C-E. So what did he do on this song?
He did quite a bit. We had the song split up. He felt that I wrote more, and I had It's like two-thirds and a third. But, you know, if we had done this today, we would have split it right down the middle. As you look back on it, it's kind of a silly process of splitting songs up in strange increments like that, you know.
You're talking about splitting up the songwriting royalties.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think today we would, because when you look, because he and I wrote together quite a bit, and you look at a lot of songwriting teams, when you look at like Lennon and McCartney, there were so many songs that Paul wrote by himself and John wrote by himself.
No, exactly,
Yeah. And if I had to do it over, I think we would have. And I've been in the situation, I wrote a song with Sandy Throckmorton, a big hit called Thinking of a Rendezvous, and I just wrote the last verse, and I took a third of that. So I've been on both ends of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But Curly's contribution was, I think it was major.
When we hear this, we'll hear a verse toward the end that is spoken. And tell us about how you wrote that part.
That part was not on the original song. The producer, Billy Sherrill, wanted us to have a verse, and I'm not sure we knew it was going to be a recitation, in which the departed's ex came to the funeral to see him one last time. And we did, I think, three or four versions of this before we got one that he, the producer, really liked. And that part of the song was written, I'd say, a year and a half, 2 years after the original draft.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's hear George Jones, He Stopped Loving Her Today, a song written by my guest, Bobby Braddock, with Curly Putman.
I went to see him just today. Oh, but I didn't see no tears. All dressed up to go away. First time I'd seen him smile in years. He stopped loving her today. It placed a wreath upon his door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. You know, she came to see him one last time.
Bobby Braddock, the word schmaltz is probably not a word that's used a lot in country music, but it's a word that comes to mind with parts of the song, schmaltz being like overly sentimental or, you know, almost maudlin. Did you think this is really going to be over the top?
I think in the hands of anyone other than George Jones, it would have been really schmaltzy. And I think George had such an intense believability about it. There's a little story that goes with this, and I think it's okay to tell it. That as George was performing in those days, the recordings were pretty much done. The vocals were often done with the band on the original tracking session, as opposed to now when they're done separately later on. And George had sung this once, and at that time, his ex, Tammy Wynette, came into the control room with her new boyfriend, who was also a friend of George, George Ritchie. And she sat down next to the producer, Billy Sherrill, in the control room. And Billy said, George, you need to sing it one more time. And so as George sang it, he was looking in the control room, and Tammy's face was, I mean, Tammy Wynette, the love of George Jones' life at that time, her face was illuminated, and he was looking right at her as he sang that song. So I think that probably put a little more poignancy into what was going on that day.
That's the take you used, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's the take that we hear. Yeah. He has his love of his life, Nancy, now. But at that time, this was like one of the great country music love stories, you know.
It must be so great to write a song and have it recorded by George Jones.
Well, it is. It's a great, great honor. I've had a lot of cuts by George Jones and Tammy Wynette, and that was a big, big part of my career. And produced by Billy Sherrill.
Well, in fact, I want to play a song that another big hit for you that you wrote for George Jones and Tammy Wynette. And I'm sure a lot of people assume that when they sang together, their songs were autobiographical in some way. And here's a song you wouldn't confuse with that, because it's a couple who buys a ring from a pawn shop because that's all they can afford. And everybody knows that George Jones and Tammy Wynette could have afforded better than that.
That's right.
But so tell us the story of the song before we hear it.
I got the idea for this song watching a made-for-TV movie. It was I don't remember the title, but it was an autobiography of a handgun, and it had belonged to a policeman. Someone stole it from him. It ended up in a pawn shop. Somebody bought it, and in the last scene, it showed a child reaching up and finding it and looking at it. And that's as far as it went. It didn't show what happened, but I thought that would be interesting to have a sort of an autobiography of a wedding band. And it didn't really turn into that, but that's sort of where it got started.
Well, let's hear Golden Ring, sung by Tammy Wynette and George Jones. This is written by my guest, Bobby Braddock, with Rafe Van Hoy, recorded in 1976.
In a pawn shop in Chicago, on a sunny summer day, a couple gazes at the wedding rings, their own display.
She smiles and nods her head as he says, "Honey, that's for you. It's not much, but it's the best that I can do.
Golden ring,
golden ring,
with one tiny little stone.
Just a cold metallic thing. Only love can make a golden wedding ring.
In a little wedding chapel later."
That was George Jones and Tammy Wynette singing Bobby Braddock's song Golden Ring. Now, you were signed to Tree Music, which I think was probably the biggest country music publisher. Is that fair?
It was. It wasn't the giant then that it is now. And of course, it is now Sony / ATV / Tree.
Now, what was the approach of Tree Music to matching, well, to deciding whether a song was worthy of being recorded, and if so, who would be chosen to sing it, or who would be asked to sing it?
My memory is of just turning in a bunch of songs, them liking the songs, and getting out there on the street and getting them cut. They had, of course, a lot of good connections. My publisher, Buddy Killen, had a very close connection with Billy Sherrill, who was a budding producer and eventually produced George Jones, Tammy Wynette, and Tanya Tucker, Barbara Mandrill, Johnny Duncan. So that was a very, very good connection. Buddy Killen himself was a very successful record producer, so my publisher produced a lot of these. So it was just pretty easy. There were not a lot of discussions about it. If they didn't like a song, they told me, you know, and more than likely the next song or two I brought them, there would be something they would like.
Did you ever think, oh, not him, don't give it to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought that a lot. Yeah, and that still happens.
Do you say anything, or do you figure, well, maybe it'll be a hit anyways?
Yeah, I think maybe it'll be a hit anyway. And eventually I became a song plugger myself and got quite a few, including the Toby Keith thing, "I Want to Talk About Me." I got that cut. And
what do you mean when you say you became a song plugger?
I just decided to go out and start pitching my own songs around. And I found this to be true. One hazard is that when I pitch songs myself, if there's a song they're not going to take, they're more apt to go ahead and tell me, "Yeah, we want that," because I'm sitting there in front of them, and then it doesn't get cut, so there's a disappointment. But the big plus to it is if I'm sitting there, they're going to listen to it all the way through, and they might hear something in it that they like that they wouldn't have heard if they had cut it off if they were sitting there by themselves.
Good point. I'm glad you brought up the Toby Keith record. This is unusual because it's a kind of rap country song. So what gave you the idea to do that?
I think it's the only number one country rap song, you know. And they probably don't need to be anymore. I got the idea for that song, Terry, but I had a friend who I talked to quite a bit on the phone, and she was going through a lot of stressful personal things, and she's at that time she seemed to pretty much dominate the conversation with things that were going on in her life. And I wrote this song and played it to her on the phone, and she didn't say anything. And a day or two later, she called me up. And she said, "That song you sing," she said, "did you write that about me?" And I said, "That's right." And so she was an inspiration to the song. And I was producing, had just begun producing a young man named Blake Shelton that I had a lot of success with producing in the past few years. And he went around doing this little rap thing just to cut up. And I thought it would be good to write a country song in rap form for him to record. And the record label thought, well, this wouldn't be a good first record for a new artist, and they were probably right. So then I took it to Toby Keith's producer, James Stroud, and he immediately liked it for Toby.
And he had a number one hit for 5 weeks.
For 5 weeks in a row, yeah. This probably as big a song as I ever had. It's probably as big as "He Stopped Loving Her Today."
Why don't we hear it? That's Toby Keith, recorded in 2001. I Want to Talk About Me, written by my guest, Bobby Braddock.
We talk about your work, how your boss is a jerk. We talk about your church and your head when it hurts. We talk about the troubles you've been having with your brother, about your daddy and your mother and your crazy ex-lover. We talk about your friends and the places that you've been. We talk about your skin and the dimples on your chin, the polish on your toes and the run in your holes. And God knows we're going to talk about your clothes. You know talking about you makes me smile. But every once in a while, I want to talk about me, want to talk about I, want to talk about number one. Oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, usually. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me.
That's Toby Keith from 2001, and my guest Bobby Braddock wrote that song. Bobby Braddock has a new memoir. It's called Down in Auburndale, A Songwriter's Youth in Old Florida, and it's about growing up in Central Florida. And a lot of people think of, like, George Jones country music and, say, Toby Keith country music as being two different forms altogether from two different eras of country music. You've, of course, had hits in both styles, both eras. Do you see that those two being as disconnected as some other people do?
I haven't really thought about it that much. Of course, sonically it's different because, for the most part, it's from different eras.
What are some of the sonic differences from the different eras?
For one thing, I can identify from different eras by the amount of reverb. Mm-hmm. And the amount of delay that they have on them, which are technical things. But stuff that you hear now, I'll tell you one difference now is singers are tuned. There are singers out there who do not have really good pitch, who probably could not have gotten deals years ago, who now, if they look good and if they have an interesting delivery and have an interesting personality, then they might get a record deal because their flatness or sharpness can be tuned by a digital process, Pro Tools. Toby Keith is not one of those. Toby live sounds pretty much like he does when he's recording. The attitude, Toby's got quite a bit of attitude, chutzpah. George comes from a different era, and it's more of a from the perspective of somebody maybe who does not have as much self-confidence this was an era when country music was about, "She went off and left me, you know, my heart's broken." You're not as apt to hear that. I can't imagine Toby Keith saying, "Baby, you left me. I love you so much. Please come back to me." Country singers did a lot of that back in the 50s and 60s. You don't hear as much about that now. They inject themselves into the songs personally a lot, too. You know, you hear songwriters saying, well, I wouldn't say that. Thankfully, you don't hear a lot of actors saying, well, I wouldn't say that, you know?
And, well, that's the point. You're acting.
I know. Yeah. I know. So that's a big difference.
Yeah. So does it bother you when a singer says, I wouldn't say that, and you want to say to them, well, who cares? I'm the one who wrote it. Though I guess I'd have a right to feel it's not right for them. You know, they can't sing it sincerely.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Now, of course, I went through that whole thing in producing Blake Shelton. I saw a completely different side of it. And, you know, I was sitting on the other side of it and I hated that process. I mean, I loved it in a way, but what I hated about it was I was in a position of saying, no, well, we're not going to record your song. And I found that very, very hard. I found that painful. Every song I passed on, I felt bad about it because I had spent my entire life being on the other side of it.
My guest is country music songwriter Bobby Braddock. His songs have been recorded by George Jones, Tammy Wynette, Tanya Tucker, and Toby Keith. So, you know, this whole idea that you can actually tune singers now, you can digitally change their pitch and make them on pitch. Does that bother you as a songwriter? Would you prefer to be have your songs interpreted by people who are just gifted singers and don't need that kind of technological fixing?
The tuning, that doesn't bother me so much. What does bother me is that I think to get a record deal now, somebody has got to be very handsome or very pretty. Mm-hmm. That bothers me because mm-hmm. I look back at some of the great singers, you know, they never would have gotten a deal today because aesthetically or cosmetically speaking, you know, I think they probably don't meet the standard of today.
Even George Jones, it's not like, oh, what a hunk.
That's right. I mean, I've heard that said in retrospect about, say, for instance, Marty Robbins mm-hmm. or Hank Williams or Patsy Cline or mm-hmm. or Kate Smith. You know, I think we would have missed out on a lot of good music, and we're probably missing out on a lot of good music now because they want people who are very video friendly.
What's one of your favorite songs of yours that we have not played?
My favorite song I've written that was a hit was Tracy Lawrence's record of Time Marches On. My favorite song that was not a hit was a song on a George Strait album. The song was called The Nerve, which was inspired by a book called Einstein's Dreams. It's sort of physics put to music.
Why is Time Marches On one of your favorites?
I think of it as being associated with Auburndale in Polk County. I think I started thinking about this song as I would go down there and we're talking about the retirees moving in there. I would notice the difference in the old crackers, the natives, and the people who had moved down there from Illinois and Wisconsin and New Jersey. I know this sounds stereotypical and it may sound a bit bizarre, but I noticed that when Southerners get older, Southern men get older, their pants get lower and lower and lower, and their tummies stick out over their belts. Northerners, as they get older, their pants get higher and higher and higher till they finally wear them up to the chest area. And that inspired the bridge of that song, the South Moves North, the North Moves South, a star is born, a star burns out. Which is actually I have in the front of my book.
Oh, that's great. Though I'm not completely sure that I would empirically agree with your conclusions about people in the North raising their pants above their belly, but it's an interesting theory.
It may be a little exaggeration, but I do have a flair for the dramatic.
You've proved that. Bobby Braddock, it's been great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Bobby Braddock has written a new memoir called Down in Auburndale, A Songwriter's Youth in Old Florida. This is the song we've been talking about, Time Marches On, sung by Tracy Lawrence.
Sisters using rouge and clear complexion soap. Brothers wearing beads and he smokes a lot of dope. Mama is depressed, barely makes a sound. Daddy's got a girlfriend in another town. Bob Dylan sings like a rolling stone. And time
time marches on. Time marches on.